let's make sure then named.
They have me here.
And thank you for joining us for this first press conference, first of four press conferences that we'll be holding during the 2017 Fall General Assembly of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. I am Judy Keene, Director of Public Affairs for the USCCB, and joining me this morning is Bishop Christopher Coyne of Burlington, Vermont. He is also our chair for the Committee on Communications, and Bishop Coyne will be introducing our panelists this morning. Bishop Coyne.
Thank you, Judy. First, just welcome to everyone. It's a good number of media. We have over 50 media credentialed, and a number of you are new. Share a number of you are familiar faces as well. We're more than willing to address the questions that you would like to raise. We ask, if you can, to make them specific to the conversations and the presentations that happened this morning, so as to have the bishops prepared to respond. Anything outside of those questions kind of can catch a moment. We have to think through what you need to say by way of answer, and we may not give as complete an answer as we can. To my left first is Cardinal Daniel Donato, who is the president of the USCCB, and to his further down is Bishop Joe Vasquez. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you an archbishop yet. Diocese of Austin, who's here to speak to the Share the Journey campaign, which was begun and promoted by Pope Francis this past September. Further down is Archbishop Joseph Naumann of the Archdiocese of Kansas City. Cardinal Dolan is not able to be here, so Archbishop Naumann is here in his stead to respond to Cardinal Dolan's presentation this morning. And finally, a late addition is Bishop Oscar Cantu he's Bishop of Las Cruces Diocese, and he is here to speak to those questions regarding the Day of Prayer for Persecuted Christians. So if you could please raise your hand, step up to the microphone, and address the question specifically to a bishop perhaps first, and then I'll let Judy moderate.
Yes, so we'll go ahead and we will open the floor to questions. So if you have a question, please raise your hand, and then I'll call upon you if you could approach the center mic. Any questions? Yes, Dennis.
Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, actually. Dennis Sadowski, Catholic News Service. Cardinal Donato, your talk mentioned guns in particular. That stuck out to me a little bit because that's been kind of a lower key issue for the bishops recently. I'm just wondering if that's something that's going to become a priority now as we go forward because of all the incidents over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, the bishops in the past, in fact, Bishop Duane outlined the conference's position last week again on gun control. We've been dealing with it since 1994. We take a position of we call common sense, those things that are more military oriented or juiced up guns. We favor that we should control sales on those matters. The point of my thing today, my comment about whether on a continent or in a hotel room, is that there's so much gun trafficking in the world, some of it of immense proportions. So that was somewhat the basis for that. But you know, this material can get around, and then it finds its way into individuals who can then pile up some of these kinds of very, very sophisticated international weapons. And so we will continue our work on it as we have always done. We are not interested in going after the hunter, as it were. I'm an archbishop from Texas. We're very knowledgeable and mindful of this as an issue, but this is, some of this is beyond the pale. So we think that this is a time for a good national discussion, and no doubt it will involve debate, but we hope with some change that would come to bring about safety from some of these really harsh weapons.
Okay, yes.
Michael Drake with American TFP. I think the question would be best to Cardinal DiNardo, perhaps Bishop Coyne. It's about all the presentations this morning on the sin of the family presented concerns, Archbishop Pierre, your presentation as well, and then the interventions of Cardinal Levada and Archbishop Vigneron. Are there concerns that the material that's going to Rome to Cardinal Baldessari and is the property of the synod, is there a worry about of opaque preparation for the synod? And is there a worry that the outcome will be different than the needs that are being brought up by the American bishops?
I would say there isn't. I think what we're so concerned about that it won't be getting there, or they even won't look at it. But one of the things you have, which is why the chair, the president does a summary, is to hit some major themes that are important for the consideration of the synod in Rome. It's this massive amount of documentation. I do recall that in the report, the indication of the nuns, and then the indication that there is, from the young people themselves, a need and a desire for good religious formation, catechesis, that's been included. Well, we can see what happens. I have no reason to think they won't get included, you know, in what they review. They're going to review mounds and mounds of pages of material, but I have no thoughts. I mean, they always have done this. The synod keeps the materials unto themselves. But
I think,
have no
along with the cardinal, too, I'd say the content and the data are important, but I think what's actually important is the process as well, that people are having an opportunity to have their voices heard. And that, you know, especially and even the greater input that's coming in the kind of meeting that the Holy Father is going to have with young people in Rome just before Holy Week. Again, it's that speaks volumes beyond just the kind of content, because the image is so lasting and striking in our culture now. But that does not in any way lessen the importance of people's voices being heard, and that the content be turned over and given to the synod for its own use. So I don't think the bishops have any concern about the issue that you raised.
Okay. Yes. Sorry, I'll get you next.
Hi, I'm Kate Amara from WBAL-TV, the NBC affiliate here in Baltimore. This is a question for Cardinal DiNardo and Bishop Vasquez. You both talked about immigration and migration, there's a protest that's going on right outside the hotel here, and the man leading it is calling on the Catholic Church to appoint a sanctuary church in every diocese in America, pointing out that many of the people who are facing deportation are Roman Catholics, and I'd just like to get your opinion on if some sort of tangible outcome like that is on the plate.
Maybe I'll start, and Bishop Vasquez can add a rejoinder. For we have been always in favor of immigrants, refugees, and for immigrants, documented, undocumented, to have resources for our local churches, our diocese, to be able to pursue policies we try to work out, sometimes in terms of legislatures or Congress, you know, for the administration, but also resources that help people at the local level. We have provided resources to help a local diocese make some decision relative to Sanctuary City. The conference itself does not go there, and there are many ways to help immigrants. The conference chooses this particular way. There may be a diocese or two that may decide to do it, Many decide not to for a number of reasons, but we provide resources and helps to local churches to help immigrants. Bishop Vasquez.
Yes, I think the number one thing for the church is to be able to be in solidarity with our immigrant and refugees. And that's been number one, certainly for our Holy Father. He has made this a priority in his pontificate right away from the very beginning, reaching out to those who are being pushed out of their own native lands because of terrorism, violence, all these things which are impacting. So there's already 65 million people that are on the move right now, have been displaced all throughout the world. And so the church has to be one that's ready to respond to them. And not to see immigrants or refugees as purely numbers, statistics, or problems, but to see them as persons, to see them as individuals that have dreams and hopes. The majority of them would rather stay in their own native lands because that's where they can find what they want and seek. But many of them, because they cannot indeed have security, cannot find economic resources, they have to look elsewhere. And this is where I think the church has to be involved and engaged in speaking to our own administration, to our local and state governments, to say, how are we going to respond and to be in solidarity with our immigrants? So as the Cardinal has mentioned already, there are some dioceses that may seek to use sanctuary as a possibility. I would say probably the majority of the dioceses are not at that level yet. So I don't think that that's where we are. I think we're really seeking other ways for us to advocate for refugees and migrants.
WJZ in Baltimore. What is your position on the administration's take on immigration and deportation? A lot of people here in Baltimore are really afraid for what the future holds, and what kind of advice can you give them or comfort can you offer them in terms of what the church might be able to do?
I think the church, again, has to show itself to be in union with our immigrant brothers and sisters. That is such a priority, to be with them, because there's a great sense of fear among our own people. They are very much afraid. They're very much concerned. Will I be separated from my family? Will my children be taken away from me? There are all these questions that are being asked. What's the future going to be? Will I have a job? Will I not be able to stay in this country and provide for my family? Those are all the questions that people are asking. So there's a lot of anxiety there. The first thing the church has to be is to show that we're with you in this. Now, we may not be able to change a lot of things immediately, but I think that's the priority, prayer. The Holy Father has asked us to pray with migrants, to be there in union with them, and then to raise awareness, to say, what can I do? What can I do? I know now the situation about immigration and refugees in our own country. How can I make a response to that? That is a very slow process. That is a slow process. And I wish that I could alleviate that tension that's there, but it's very hard. It's very hard. The most important thing the church does is being there with our immigrants and refugees.
I would add with Bishop, what Bishop said, wisely said, we're with them. Sometimes that means, for instance, in our Catholic Charities, we have a whole groups of lawyers who try to be with them in a very practical way in terms of how you go through all of these steps and things of immigration. How do we try to work to keep families together? So there are practicalities involved in this, but we want the church to be the one that they know they can go to, that they can walk with. And I think his insistence on this, Bishop Vasquez's insistence on this, is pretty important.
Okay, great. And on that note, too, there's a website, www.justiceforimmigrants.org, that you may also want to check out as well. It has numerous materials online to support the statements the bishops have just made. Okay, Michael O'Loughlin from America.
Thank you. Cardinal DiNardo, you and Cardinal Parolin both talked about division in society. I have a question about division in the church. A lot of that internal division seems to be driven by social media, sometimes Twitter accounts run by priests, online sites that are kind of self-styled watchdogs of orthodoxy. What role do bishops have in monitoring this and kind of keeping tabs on how this division is sowed by online activists?
I would say you have a good communication staff. You have a group who will keep you alert and alive, particularly in your own area. There's so much of this material around. Michael, I'd have to say I don't know where half of it comes from, but I have a good communications group that can help me. I think part of it is simply to alert some of your people who call upset because they've seen something like this. So you need to be able to have a communication staff that can quietly and with reason put all of these things into context. There is some division. Some of it sounds more raucous than it actually is when you get to parishes and you discover, well, it was just something that day. Anything further? I'd almost like to pass this to Bishop Coyne.
Thank you. I would say that the conference is very much aware, Michael, of the point that you've raised. Over the past year and a half, the communications office has really stepped up to the plate in terms of its more immediate response to issues that are out there and maybe what we hear, making sure that we get the true facts out there. The number of statements that have been produced through the communications office and the public relations office of the conference within 24 hours has been measurably increased over the past year and a half. So again, the speed of news today is so fast that the conference is really making an effort to respond in a way to avoid just the kind of misrepresentations that you refer to. Yes.
Mark Patterson from Catholic News Service. This question is for Bishop Cantu. I know that in your travels as the committee chair that you've made a lot of fact-finding missions to nations where Catholics and Christians may be persecuted. While we were waiting for the press conference to begin, conference staff was distributing this report, Persecuted and Forgotten. So I got a two-part question. One, are persecuted Christians forgotten and or at risk of being forgotten? And the second part was, there seems to be, for lack of a better term, a belt of hostility, with the exception of Nigeria, a contiguous belt from Sudan, going up into Asia and working its way all around the continent into Northeast Asia, China and North Korea. Is there something particular about that, or is it just happenstance that most oppression against Christians happens to be in that part of the globe?
Well, thank you for your question. And it's certainly poignant to visit with our brothers and sisters, our Christian brothers and sisters in the Middle East. And a reminder to me and to all of us that they have been there for close to 2,000 years, and certainly in Palestine for 2,000 years. And so there's an ancient tradition, there's an ancient culture, and they are threatened to be displaced completely. I am reminded by the words of Patriarch Rai from Lebanon, who in a conversation with him, he said that as Christians are leaving the Middle East for safety, for a host of reasons, but primarily safety, that he's concerned about the Middle East. He said Christians can live without the Middle East, but the Middle East can't live without Christians, because the Christian culture brings a moderating and balancing effect to society in the Middle East. It is important because the Christians are such a small sliver of a minority in places like Iraq, that they are often overlooked. And so my visits have concentrated on the minorities that have been persecuted, particularly religious persecution, the Yazidis, the Christians and others. And so we reach out as part of our tradition to those who are most vulnerable. And the Christians happen to be in that group of the most vulnerable. And so we try to remind them and to give them a voice in Washington, which we have tried to do as effectively as possible. The legislation that is now in the Senate being taken up to identify the atrocities in the Middle East as genocide for important historical purposes. And so I've seen that as my primary work, to give voice in the U.S. and around the world to those who have very little voice in their own homes. As to the geographic reality of persecution, that's not something I have studied. It's an interesting question, and I would just guess that there is a proximity of a geographical proximity of those groups that have grown and have been funded in the northern part of Africa, in the Middle East, and so they seem to support each other. They certainly have regimes that support them and fund them. I'm not sure I can say more about that.
Okay, great. Because the bishops also have to get some lunch before they go into the next session, I think we'll conclude the press conference at this time. And then please know that we have one more press conference today that's likely to start at approximately 5:10. So we'll see you back here then. Thank you. Thank you, bishops. Thank you, Your Eminences and Your Excellency.